Good evening, it is 5 p.m., and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, and Ellie Sturton. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. After a long debate at their July 8th meeting, council voted down a motion to remove the 924 Sydenham Road property from consideration for a homeless shelter. The city purchased the property located at 924 Sydenham Road with the intent of establishing a 30-bed shelter to open late in 2025. This shelter marks the first step in geographically redistributing shelter operations and preparing for the closure of the Adelaide Street shelter at 38 County Street. City staff held a public meeting on May 29th, during which many residents of the neighborhood expressed concerns with the proposed location due to the amount of elderly people and young families in the neighborhood, the busy road, as well as its proximity to the Cataraqui Cemetery, also a National Historical Site, and the elementary school Destiny Christian Academy. These concerns prompted Councillor Paul Shays to put forward a motion to remove the 924 Sydenham Road property from consideration for a shelter. A line of delegation spoke before council in support of the motion. Resident John Armstrong represented residents of Cataraqui North, including the 1,090 who signed a petition to remove the site from consideration.
Some may say this is just a case of not in my backyard, but what we are really asking for is fair, responsible planning that respects the safety of seniors, the character of this neighborhood, and the lessons learned from past shelter sites. We are deeply alarmed and frankly dismayed by Council's decision to place a 17 to 45 bed homeless shelter at 924 Sydenham Road. We feel blindsided. We all know the reality. Where shelters go, issues follow, from uncontrolled drug use to inappropriate behavior to encampments. These challenges will spill into our parks, playgrounds, and streets.
Jenny Paquette, board chair of Destiny Christian Academy, and Craig Bowles, general manager of the Cataraqui Cemetery, shared the concerns of their respective organizations before council.
Our primary concern is the safety of our students and their younger siblings, many of whom use the school's outdoor spaces daily. These spaces are essential for their growth, play, and their sense of security. With deep respect, we must acknowledge that unmanaged proximity to individuals facing complex mental health and addiction challenges could create unpredictable and unsafe environments, especially in an area heavily used by our children. This is not about stigma. This is about ensuring thoughtful, responsible placement of services that consider proximity to vulnerable youth.
Shelter users absolutely have rights, but so do grieving families, so do religious communities, so does the public who use and rely on cemeteries as sacred and dignified spaces. By placing a shelter beside the cemetery, council is creating a conflict. The solution is clear: relocate the shelter. This removes the very real and likely instances of verbal altercation, aggressive behavior, loitering, trespass, encampment, substance abuse, discarded paraphernalia, noise disturbances. I can continue. These are not stereotypes. These are documented realities and behavioral issues that come with shelters. So again, cemeteries are not just parcels of land. They are sacred community assets. The decision to place a shelter beside a cemetery appears to have overlooked the sanctity of an active community that is dedicated to mourning, religious observance, reflection, mental wellness, tourism, community dignity.
Mark Finnegan, a Sydenham Road resident who lives directly across from the proposed shelter site, stressed the safety concern of the high speeds and traffic on Sydenham Road.
So I had my niece sit there with a radar gun yesterday and clock cars going up the road. It was average speeds of 66 kilometers an hour. An average impact of a car to a person is about 80% fatality at that speed. There was people driving at 80, 75 was a regular, and that's just one day. That's on a Monday. On Fridays, I couldn't get her there sooner on a Friday. On Fridays, it's much worse. People who are mentally ill, on drugs, walking up and down one of the busiest streets in Kingston. I guarantee you somebody's going to die here. I'm not telling you maybe somebody's going to die here. Someone will die here. It will be on all of you. I know two of you voted against it. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And thank you, Paul, for bringing this back up. somebody will die. Guaranteed.
Many counselors echoed the concerns of the delegations that came forward, including counselors Lisa Osanek and Gary Osteroff.
I did agree to this location originally, but I'm convinced now I made a mistake doing that. It's the unforeseen circumstance, like the unforeseen consequences to the cemetery, like a National Historic Cemetery, and we could be ruining it. And that just completely petrifies me.
I really, really see this as something we missed. I think this is just a really, really bad location for this task and the mission that it will have. It's basically inaccessible. It's inaccessible, especially safely wise. We have to acknowledge that, because if we don't acknowledge it tonight when we have a chance, it's on us. Like, I don't know what we're going to do to slow that traffic down. We saw it very clearly.
However, other counselors were willing to move forward with the site. Counselors Connie Glenn and Wendy Stevens stressed the urgency of the homelessness crisis and the lack of other options.
City staff have given a lot of thought to this, so I think that some of the comments that I heard about staff didn't consider this or that or the next thing simply isn't true. There was a ton of consideration, effort, and work that went into this. So at this time, I can't support this motion. I know that that's not what a number of members of the community want to hear, but I don't think that we will ever get out of the situation we're in if we are not bold and take these steps.
No one is designing neighborhoods saying, oh, we'll put a school here, have commercial over here. This is where the homeless shelter will go. That's not how we plan a city, because nobody expected it to get this bad. So, very reluctantly, I will not be supporting this motion, but it's not because I think shelters are good. It's not because I think they work, but I think it's because it's the only thing we can do.
Counselors Gregory Ridge, Vincent Chinani, and Don Amos reflected on the lessons the city has learned from past shelters, including the importance of spreading out services, the size of the shelter, and day programming.
I think that based on the community consultation that has happened with regards to the Adelaide Street Shelter, staff have very much heard what needs to be done to move forward with improving any shelters.
The shelters that are further away in other areas, you don't hear about problems from them, because the way I see it is people don't want to be near the hub. You know, some people want to be away from that. They want to, you know, have a bed and not have to worry about all the worries that everyone else has with the shelters that are problematic. And like I said, we've learned a lot of lessons. Like, smaller is better. So I think it's a good thing to spread things out.
I requested a meeting with Lionheart's executive director, Travis, who was running the Adelaide Street Shelter, and had a discussion with him about lessons learned. He talked about a holistic approach. He talked about not just being a shelter service, but providing client service to get them back on that right track of not waking up going, I didn't choose to do this. I didn't choose to be homeless. About helping them getting their life back in order so that they can take that positive step forward. We are that safety net. Adelaide is not working. It's too big. Staff and the operator have both said a smaller system can work. I think we need to move forward in this direction.
Councillor Ryan Bohm pointed to the larger issue of a lack of support from upper levels of government, mentioning that he may be bringing an advocacy-based motion forward in the near future, calling on the province to step up.
There's no win here. That's the problem, right? So we're struggling with a crisis that is not of our making: mental health, addictions, lack of treatment centers, and I guess in a sense, we're all angry. I'm angry. I'm angry that we're sitting here at 11 o'clock at night debating what is at best a stopgap measure that will impose a temporary shelter service facility in an area that really isn't right for it, in my opinion. But at the same time, we're also facing that if we don't put it here, where do we put them? And we have short Canadian summers. So can staff find a spot? Or are we just going to end up with encampments or people freezing to death? So I kind of see a damned if you do approach here. But we're wrestling with things that, frankly, we are not equipped financially as a city to solve. And we keep going around and around and we get frustrated and we want to do good and we want to solve it. But realistically, we can't solve this on our own. If the other levels of government don't want to come and play ball, then we have to start calling them out.
After much debate, Mayor Brian Patterson brought forward a compromise, offering to add a new motion which would require a review and re-evaluation of the shelter after 6 months of operation.
I think one of the issues that we're trying to get at here is that the location of the shelter seems to matter. The location in a certain area of the city seems to create a lot of secondary negative impacts. And when you take that shelter out of that area, it seems to be far more manageable and actually can work. But I also appreciate the very legitimate concerns from the cemetery, from the Christian school up the road, from the surrounding neighborhoods. These are not things that can be dismissed. So what do we do? So here's my conclusion. If this motion fails, then I will immediately put forward a new motion tonight that would put a 6-month timeline on this. Get us through the winter, because the winter, obviously, that's when shelter spaces are most important. And let's see what happens. Obviously, we want this to succeed. But I'll be honest with you, if any of these issues or concerns actually occur, in my view, that's not a success. And so if we try this out and it doesn't work, then I will bring forward a motion to remove the shelter at that point, and we look for somewhere else.
Councillor Shaves' motion to remove the site from consideration lost by a vote of 8-5. Mayor Patterson's new motion came to the floor afterwards and was supported unanimously by council, with the addition that all shelters would be subject to this review process.
You'll see the timeline from the opening of the shelter, 6 months. The direction to staff is to report back with detailed operational review, including anything feedback from police, bylaw, and most importantly, the neighborhood liaison committee. And so in my view, that information will then give council the opportunity to say, obviously, one of two things. Either it's working and it can continue, or if it's not working, then we pull the plug. The other point I think that's I would say is that obviously, if we're going to do this review for this shelter, I think it's fair that we do this review for other shelters as well. Because at the end of the day, right, we understand that there have been those issues around shelters, so we need to be able to monitor and to be able to react accordingly. I think that's we owe our citizens, all citizens, that approach, and trying to navigate through this very difficult issue, as many people have already said. I think that this is the best middle ground that I can possibly come up with here to be able to proceed with the shelter.
That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Ellie Sturton with your CFRC Arts Desk.
Hi, everyone. I'm CFRC's Arts News Coordinator, Ellie Sturton, and today I want to update you on Kingston's arts and culture scene. This past weekend, downtown Kingston hosted the 35th annual Buskers Rendezvous. The hugely successful event, featuring countless street performers, culminated with a grand finale on Sunday. At the finale, votes were cast for the People's Choice winner, and this year it was a tie between Richard Phillippe and the Twins Trip. Due to their popularity, these two winning acts will be invited back to the 2026 Buskers Rendezvous. And in other arts news, Kingston's Arts Council is still accepting responses for their Artist Prosperity Survey, which aims to increase understanding and data surrounding Kingston's artist economics. Here's a note from Kingston Arts Council Program and Communications Coordinator, BC Gorey, on why this project is so important in maintaining Kingston's thriving arts and culture scene.
The Artist Prosperity Project was something that we began working on when we were trying to advocate for better funding in the city. And we kept running into barriers when people would ask for data on how artists were doing financially. And unfortunately, that data just doesn't exist. So we worked hard to develop this survey and this project to collect that raw data on how artists are faring financially and in their artistic practices, so we can better advocate for the resources and finances that they need. The more people who filled out the survey, the more people who respond, the better we can use that data and advocate for the arts.
That was BC Gorey from the Kingston Arts Council discussing the Artist Prosperity Project. The previous deadline for survey submissions was July 11th, but it has been extended and artists are still encouraged to fill out the survey. And that's all for today's Arts Updates. Thanks for listening.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Monday, July 14th, daytime high of 27, going to feel closer to 30 with the humidity. Bear in mind, we could see some haze in the Kingston region due to wildfire smoke, which will create reduced air quality. Tuesday, July 15th, more humidity and more hazy sunshine, daytime high of 28, but it's going to feel even warmer at 32 with a UV index of 9. Wednesday, July 16th, much of the wildfire smoke will have passed, but it's still going to be a hot, humid day in the city of Kingston with a daytime high of 27, feeling closer to 33. Thursday, July 17th, high of 27, feeling closer to 33 with the humidity. It's going to be a very humid and very warm day here in the city of Kingston. Friday, July 18th, we have a couple of showers in the forecast with the possibility of a thunderstorm that will cut down on some of the humidity, but it's still going to feel like 30 degrees here in the city of Kingston. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, July 19th, probably the nicest day of the week. It's going to be 26, but only feel like 28. Beautiful, sunny climate and conditions. Sunday, July 20th, we are expecting rain, a 73% chance of precipitation. Daytime high of 25, feeling like 26. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, July 21st, it'll be 26 degrees with plenty of beautiful sunshine. Here is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. The LaSalle Causeway will be closed on Sunday, July 20th from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Moving on to the road closures for the week, Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Abidon Road, Highway 2 to Middle is closed until August 15th for the removal and replacement of a culvert. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Baggett Street, Berry to West is closed July 16th at 7 a.m. to July 23rd at 7 p.m. to accommodate pedestrian and participant safety for the Canadian Little League Championship. Brock Street, Division 2 Palace is closed July 14th to 31st from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day for road resurfacing. Carlton Street, Alfred to Guy, closed until August 8th for a gas main installation. Creighton Street at Chatham, closed July 14th to 17th from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day to accommodate the removal of existing water and sanitary sewer services. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Guy Street, Carlton to Division, is closed until August 8th for a gas main installation. King Street, Place d'Armes to Tragically Hip Way, closed July 14th to 27th for Paw Patrol event-related parking and storage at Slush Puppy Place. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria, is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen, is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett, is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Wise Street, Woodbine to Megan, is closed until July 31st to accommodate construction of a new sidewalk and road improvements. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Accommodation Road, 6th concession to White Church. Expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Abidon Road, middle to Highway 2. Expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson. Expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catterockway Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners. Expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Collins Bay Road, Woodbine to Princess. Expect delays while a contractor completes landscaping work on Collins Bay Road. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic is down to one lane in each direction. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford. Expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Garrett Road, 6th concession to Sandhill. Expect delays while a contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Highway 2 to Abidon and St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abidon Road, Highway 2 and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle. Expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users. Victoria Street and Earl Street. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road. And White Church Road, 6th concession to Woodburn. Expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract.
Now coming up, we'll have a look at some great community events running in Kingston and the area this week. On Wednesday, it's Games in the Square from 6 to 8 p.m. in Springer Market Square. Play giant board games like Connect Four and Snakes and Ladders, or bring your own game to share. It's free, fun, and open to all ages. Thursday starts with Stories in the Square at 10:30 a.m. in the City Hall Amphitheater. It's a free drop-in story time from the public library, perfect for young kids. That evening, check out Best of the Fest at the Broom Factory. Starting at 8:45 p.m., it's an outdoor screening of award-winning short films from the Kingston Canadian Film Festival. Tickets are $10 and kids under 12 get in free. Or pop into Life Drawing at Art Noise from 6 to 8 p.m. It's just $10 to join and practice figure drawing in a relaxed and welcoming space. On Friday, grab a spot in Springer Market Square at 11 a.m. for a chef demo with Miss Bao. Watch a dish come together with local ingredients and enjoy a $2 sample. That evening, Rowena Way hosts Drag Bingo at Carlo Estates Winery from 6 to 9 p.m. It's 19 plus and just $10, which goes towards your first drink. Also on Friday at 6 p.m., Springer Market Square offers free line and square dancing lessons. No partner needed, just bring your boots and your best moves. On Saturday, Daft Brewing hosts Sourfest from noon to 8 p.m. Expect live music from Nolan Hubbard, sour beer from 7 breweries, and $15 pizzas for ticket holders. Tickets are $10 in advance or $15 at the door and include 2 drink tickets. It's a 19 plus event for charity. And finally on Sunday, start your day with Yoga in the Park at Battery Park from 10 to 11 a.m. It's free, just bring your own mat. From 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., browse local vendors at the Montreal Street Vintage Market between Princess and Queen. Then from noon to 3 p.m., head to Confederation Park for Pull Together for Epilepsy. Teams of 8 will pull a fire truck to raise awareness and funds. Registration opens at 11 a.m., and it's all in support of Epilepsy Southeastern Ontario. Have a local event you would like covered on CFRC's news programming and our website? Contact us today via cfrc.ca. Hey folks, I'm Ellie Sturton, and coming up are your live music events happening around town this week. On Wednesday, folks can see Tyler Brett Forks at the Bank Gastro Bar Courtyard from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Expect breezy originals and bluesy covers. And at 7 p.m., Springer Market Square hosts Swingin' Summer with the nostalgic sound Big Band, playing joyful jazz from the Big Band era. On Thursday, head to the RCHA for their open mic at 6:30 p.m., followed by a set from Michael George. Cover is just $5. Or see Tony Silvestri play the Cove Inn from 5 to 8 p.m. with his signature blend of keys and vocals. At Overtime Sports Bar, it's Night of Punk and Metal with 4 bands starting at 9 p.m. Cover's just $10. And The Spire hosts We Three Kings, a triple Elvis tribute at 7:30 p.m. with tickets going for just over $55. Or for fans of classical chamber music, the Griffin Trio plays St. Paul's Presbyterian Church at 3:15 p.m. On Friday, Time Out Bar and Bistro hosts Riley Merrigan playing Country and Roots at 3 p.m., followed by Kingston's own Purple Diamonds at 6 p.m. In Springer Market Square, catch Kickin' It Country, featuring Whiskey Smoke live from 7 to 8, playing country tunes. You can see The Salt Cellars at Hotel Wolf Island from 7 to 9 p.m. They're a folk Americana duo that blends blues and jazz. At Musiki Cafe, the Dave Barton Trio plays smooth jazz from 8 to 11 p.m. Or head to Tiernan Oak for the Celtic Kitchen Party, starting at 9 p.m., with a lively night of Irish, Scottish, and East Coast-inspired tunes. And later, Jelly Train takes the stage at the Toucan at 10:30 p.m., with funk, blues rock, and soulful tunes. On Saturday, catch Confederation Park's Saturday Sessions, running from 11:30 to 3:30 p.m., featuring Triola Trio, Barry Ewan, and Dave Barton. Or join Howe Island's Rockin' the Rock Festival for a full day of live music, including The Box, Goodnight Sunrise, The Brothership, and more. Tickets are $49.50. Over at Gilmore Point, Intero Bing plays a free outdoor set from 1 to 3 p.m. And at the Kingston Yacht Club, Craig Jones and the Alternative Facts perform a charity show at the Easter Seals Summerfest Regatta from 1 to 3 p.m. And Hotel Wolf Island is hosting free sets from Kevin Bowers at 4 p.m. and DePamela at 8:30 p.m. And folks can see the National Youth Orchestra playing at the Isabel at 7:30 p.m. Also on Saturday, Musiki Cafe hosts the Fake Jazz Orchestra from 8 to 11 p.m. with improvisational jazz. The Matt Smith Trio plays Time Out Bar and Bistro from 6 to 9 p.m. with blues rock covers and originals. You can also catch Steve Cheeseman and the Heaters at the Royal Canadian Legion from 8 to midnight for just $25 at the door. And at Tiernan Oak, Echoes closes out the night with alt rock from 9 p.m. to midnight. On Sunday, Georgette Fry and friends play the Broom Factory at 3 p.m. with tickets for $32.50. Finkelshore Park has free music from 2 to 5 with Chris Morris, Sonia Bergen, and Drop Dead Georges. Folks can catch Savannah Shea playing Musiki from 2 to 4 and Jeff Richardson at Time Out Bar and Bistro at 3. And at 3:30 p.m., pay what you can to hear Timothy Loden play waterfront piano at Hotel Wolf Island. And finally, over at Red House Downtown, Chris Koster and his band perform from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m., and tickets for that are $25. Have a local concert that you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via cfrc.ca.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.